Merhaba, ve hoş geldiniz. Welcome to Talking Round North Cyprus, a podcast where we aim to cover all the important talking points surrounding the TRNC. We chat to the good and the great and find out what they think of North Cyprus, and indeed for many why they chose to spend their lives in a country which, let's be honest, at this time doesn't really exist according to most of the rest of the world. As ever, I'm joined by my former colleague at the BBC and drinking partner, Roger Barra, who's long settled over there in Paradise. Hi, Rog. We're now just into September. What's it like? You still melting out there?
Yeah, we are actually still melting, although thank goodness the humidity has relaxed in recent days and it's more like normal. So the heat is a bit more bearable. But guess what? On Monday night, some of the island was subject to a huge summer storm, which is very unusual for August. It was last Monday, actually. Here in Lapta, we're still in our holiday apartment. We could see the lightning, so we went out onto the balcony and the mountains were just covered in lightning. It was non-stop. Wow. It was really spectacular. Loads of thunder to go with it and not one drop of rain. Not one.
No.
It completely passed the spot. And yet we've got friends whose houses were flooded.
Goodness
You know what it's like over here when it showers. Some places get away scot-free and others get inundated. But it was quite exciting to have rain in August because, my goodness, we need it. But I noticed some of the weather apps are saying next Monday, in a couple of days' time, there's a sort of 60% chance of precipitation, a posh word for rain. So it would be so nice to remember what it feels like to stand in the rain because it's been so long. Now, I know people listening in the UK and other places in the world are probably going mad because that's all you've had for most of the summer. But over here, it's just so welcome because we know, A, it's going to be in small doses and, B, the sun's going to shine again very soon anyway.
And it'll dry it up. They forecast for September a bit of a mini heat wave. I mean, when we say heat wave, it'll get into the 20s. So I think we're not holding our breath particularly, but it is quite mild at the moment, actually, but obviously not as warm as it has been there. Unfortunately, no forest fires, no floods. I mean, that's the trouble, isn't it? When you get extremes of weather, you then get problems with it, but touch wood that everything's been okay. So I just wanted to go back, actually, to what we were talking about in our last podcast, the one where I was over in the TRNC. And it was something that I noticed while I was there. I know it was the summer holidays and everything, but we mentioned the number of Russians who now live in North Cyprus. And bizarrely, on the Monday when I got back home, a friend who writes for the Sunday Times, she sent me an article written by Hannah Lucinda Smith. Now, she's a fantastic writer. She specialises in Turkey and the Middle East. She's written loads of books, including one called Erdogan Rising. And the article was called Russians Bank on North Cyprus to Buy into a New Life in Europe. Incomers to a new city bring in cash but pose a threat to the balance in the area. She even mentioned Eskele in her article. And I just thought it was incredibly timely. I'm just going to read you, if I may, what she said, because it was one of those things that I was chatting to various people about, you know, different things and the way that the population is growing. So she does say Russian newcomers have swelled North Cyprus population by a sixth and brought in cash. Russia's also considering direct flights to the territory's airport, which opened last year. For businesses and the island's politicians, that's a boon. Ersin Tatar, the North's leader, is pushing to expand international recognition. But the influx of Russians risks upsetting a demographic and political balance. Since 1974, the Turkish Cypriot population has been gradually overwhelmed by settlers from the mainland, who tend to be more nationalistic and have helped to tie the island to Ankara. The Russian arrivals have swollen the population of the north by a sixth. And as I say, it was just very interesting that I was having those conversations while I was there because it was something I really noticed.
I've read two newspapers this morning. The first is the North Cypriot-based Cyprus Today. And I've also been sent an article on this very subject written by Cyprus Mail. Now, that's the southern, the Greek Cypriot online newspaper. First of all, in Cyprus Today, the main opposition Republican Turkish Party leader, he's drawn attention to escalating foreign property acquisitions, and he's not at all happy. He said there's not a single Turkish Cypriot buyer now in Eskele. or Esentepe, or Tatlisu. They are all foreigners, he said. And real estate agents who make a living from this are telling him that. And you know, it says here, 50% of the new businesses started up in Iskeli in the last year are estate agents. Good. That's one in two new businesses are estate. Now, it makes you wonder how many are properly registered, you know, and legal, because we know that that's a problem as well. But he says Turkish Cypriots are going to sell whatever they have and flee the country. Oh. You know, no Turkish Cypriot can now really afford to buy property because the prices are just escalating, particularly in those areas mentioned, you know, Eskele, Esentepe, etc. The government really is sort of saying things like, yes, we must do something about it. But you know what? I don't think they're really that bothered.
No, because they're getting the,
it's bringing money in, but the Turkish Cypriots are definitely being marginalized. It reminds me a bit of the Docklands area of London when they started upgrading it and priced all the indigenous local Dockland people out, and only the rich and wealthy, you know, that can afford the astronomical prices of the new Docklands could afford to live there. Now, if we go down to the southern newspaper, the South Cyprus newspaper, Cyprus Mail, there's a big article here saying that Russian and Israeli investments in property in the north are continuing with seemingly no let-up in sight. Now, of course, being a Greek Cypriot newspaper, they refuse to use the Turkish name, so Iskele is Trikomo. And when they talk about the North Cypriot Parliament, Parliaments in inverted commas, because of course they don't recognize that it really exists. So once you get your head around that, but it says that the number of third country nationals in the TRNC and the speed of property acquisition have increased incredibly since the pandemic. And again, it says there is not even a single domestic buyer in, and they use the Greek word, so Iskele, Esentepe, Tatlisu. Wow. So that is, you know, both sides of the border are saying exactly the same thing. And it says here the country seems to have little will to stop all this from happening. And the Israeli, they're talking about Israeli developers, because there's plenty over here. And, of course, that's what they do.
Yeah.
You know, they go to foreign places and they build stuff and sell it. At the moment, as I mentioned in our last podcast, you know, some of these developers are building 30 high-rise monuments at the same time.
Yeah.
Before, it used to be build one, finish it, build the foundations for the next one. Now there's 20, 30 on the go throughout the country, and they wouldn't do that unless they knew they had buyers. So the demand from abroad to buy land in the TRNC has increased. Will the government do anything about it? Do they want to? My opinion is they probably don't want to do anything about it because they're all right jacked.
My worry is that at some point the bubble will burst, that since the war in Ukraine, not many Russians want to be in Russia, and so they're bringing their money and buying property. But at some point, something will happen and they'll perhaps want to go back to Russia, and they will take their money and they will sell their properties and they will take their money back to Russia. And therefore, we will have buildings and buildings and buildings that then perhaps aren't used anymore. That's my worry further down the line. But anyway, it's quite interesting, actually, because we'll hear in a little while from Mike from Eagle's Nest, and he does actually talk about this and talk about the influx of foreigners. And obviously, he's running a business and it's good for him. But anyway, so on that note, when I was over a couple of weeks ago, I did go off to visit some of the lovely people we've already had on our podcast. Firstly, I went up to Dipkarpaz to visit Gül, who wanted to show me her new holiday cabins and chat about displaying her art somewhere. But first, we went to feed her animals. So while we're still here, Gül, just tell me who we've got in here.
Right, we've got the two turkeys, two ducks, and two geese. Sorry, we've got four ducks, actually, because they had babies. See, that one is a baby.
Oh, yeah.
And the other little white one is a baby. And what have I got? About five chickens?
Yeah.
Five, six chickens.
And a rooster.
I had more, and I used to let them out. The chicks, when they were tiny, they would come out of these bars. And unfortunately, they got taken by crows, probably. Aww. It was so sad. So I ended up giving the rest of the chicks, a couple of the chicks, to a friend.
Yeah.
And I've just got that one left for myself.
Oh, they all seem to get on, though, don't they?
They do. But it's amazing how the rooster, who's only little himself, but he tends to protect them all. As I told you before, he actually attacked me twice for kissing the goose and cuddling the goose. But he's learned his lesson after a few little smacks, and he's not done it yesterday. He's not done it today. Let's see if he does it today. I don't think so. I don't think he will do that again.
Right, let's go and feed her. Time for the feed the dogs.
Because they're not tied up, they can run around. Yeah. It's quite spacious. Until I get them spayed. Hopefully next week I'll get them down to the vets.
They're coming out, they're coming out. Yay! Hey! Hello.
Caramel, hello. This way, baby. Good boy, Caramel. Oh, she doesn't know whether to come to me or you. Yeah, look at the way they run.
So are they related?
No. Only
no.
The two that are in there, they're sisters.
Yeah.
Kiki is from somebody else. Yeah. And Sheena was left at my gate when she was a little tiny
pup. She's so sweet.
With her brother.
Yeah.
And I managed to find a home for the brother. Everybody wants males. They don't want females. So she stayed with me.
Yeah.
And it's the same with the other two. They had two brothers as well, which I managed to find a home for. But the two females have stayed with me. Yeah. So that's it now. I'm stuck with them
And you have an extra one. We can hear extra barking. And the black one.
He just won't leave. He stays outside.
He wants to be a friend, doesn't he?
Yeah. They do play outside when my big dog goes over the wall. She's quite streetwise, so I don't get too worried about her. As long as the others don't get out, but occasionally one does jump over the wall. But this one has fallen in love with my girls, and he sticks around outside the gates all night, all day.
Yeah.
And
he looks quite old.
So skinny and old, I feed him as well. So I've got five dogs to feed now. And I hope the numbers don't go up.
That's the trouble,
I'll
isn't it?
I'll be bankrupt.
That's
goodness.
The trouble. So let's go and have a look at your lovely cabins. Why did you decide to put three lovely cabins in your already lovely garden?
The immediate thought was when my children, three children I have, 54-year-old and 53-year-old who's married with two children. I thought when they come, they might want their privacy then. And the idea of staying in a wooden cabin is lovely. So I thought I'll do it. And also, when they come, they could stay in it. And I thought to myself also that the way things were going, I was getting, done by builders left, right and centre. I'm probably going to run out of money at the end of my life, probably at some point. So I thought then I could just, rent them occasionally and have a little bit to live on, So I made sure they were done quite nicely, and the view is nice as well, and it's very, very breezy over this end, as you've noticed, haven't you?
It's lovely.
I don't get this breeze on my balcony, you see, because of the trees.
Well, let's go and have a look.
Yeah, I think Sheena wants to have a look as well.
Yes. So as you say, it's a lovely view out over the countryside, and you can see
and
the sea.
The breeze
from here.
Is just really nice over here, so. Yeah. Each little cabin has its own balcony with a table and chairs, and so anyone wants to sit outside, they can.
Yeah, I did this morning with my cup of tea.
Yeah.
Go in.
So basically, it's self-contained. They can cook. There's a tiny little kitchen area, and we decided that later on, when I thought, well, I might need to rent them at some point, and then I added the little kitchen there. Its own toilet, its own shower, hot water.
A big double bed.
And air conditioning, which is absolutely necessary in this country, as you've noticed.
But nice big windows as well. So, you've obviously got the mosquito sort of netting over, but you can open the windows and get that breeze coming through.
And a double bed. I thought I'll just rent it to couples, but I have had cousins who come up to stay with kids, and what we do is bring in a mattress and do something for the kids. And I had a friend who came with a baby as well, and we just folded up the quilt, made a nice little comfortable bed on the floor for her. She was a year and a half old.
Aww.
So they were quite happy. Yeah.
And then you've got a self-contained bathroom as well. So you've got your shower and toilet and everything that
so
you need in the little cupboard.
Plus they get free eggs in the morning, which is nice for someone who comes from the city who has no animals at all. And for animal lovers, you know, to see the ducks and the geese and the turkeys and chickens roaming around.
Yeah,
it's lovely. And to wake up to the sound of them, you know, and the birds, it's really nice. And also the peace and quiet, which a lot of people are longing for coming from the city. So we get quite a few cousins so far. I've been getting cousins and some friends and so on wanting to come up and stay. Just for the peace and quiet.
Well, I noticed even just from coming from Caesar Resort, because they start building at 7:10, 6:10 in the morning, and it's ongoing. Yeah. I mean, you sort of block it out after a while, but I must admit, last night, there was nothing. There was, you know, just the crickets,
Yeah, oh, I love the sound of those. And, of course, the sea is, we're in between the two sides, aren't we? We're at the point of Cyprus, so people tend to come up because of no pollution. The government so far has not allowed anyone to build big hotels.
Good.
Because you know what happens with that. Directly, raw sewage is going into the sea. So we're getting people coming from Kyrenia, from Famagusta, to this area. Everybody wants to come here because of no pollution in the beaches.
Because you were saying about this sort of supplementing your income, having the cabins.
Just a little
But you are an artist, and you have sold paintings, and you'd like to do that. You'd like to do that a bit more.
So we're getting a lot of tourists, you know. And then there's lots of things that I want to bring to the attention of the government. So I want to do this great big exhibition in a very nice place. I mean, our representative that came to England, he actually came to my exhibition at the House of Commons and gave a speech. So he knows me. If I can get hold of him, maybe I'll get a nice place to do this one more exhibition.
But you are looking for spaces, aren't you, that you can bring? And just sort of put your paintings up while people are eating or something.
Especially in Skele. In Skele, because I know that there's an awful lot of Russians, a lot of rich people coming there. So anyone,
a lot of houses, and everybody needs paintings on their wall, don't they?
Exactly. So if I can just take, if someone accepts me to take my paintings and they hang it up or just put it around on the floor, even against the wall, so tourists can see that they're for sale. That would be a little income, and then I can carry on painting.
And if people want to see your paintings, you do have a Facebook page, don't you? Just spell out your name for
us. My name is it's GulceHre. That's Gulcehre, my Christian name. And Çıplak is the surname, which is Cyplak. So if they Google that name, they will see some of my things come up even after all these years, you know, some of the exhibitions I did in London. I don't regret coming back after 60 years, but I do miss parts of London like Kew Gardens and my Bayswater Road, where I used to show my artwork on the Hyde Park railings, you know. Every Sunday I used to look so forward to going there all day long. I really miss that. Certain other things as well that I miss in England, but this is a new life and I've got to make the most of it, because there's no returning for me. I come back for good. This is where I was born, and this is where I would like to get buried. Hopefully much later on.
Yes, I was going to say, not yet. Not yet. Cool Çıplak there. So if you know somewhere that would like to have some lovely art hanging on the walls, maybe you've got a restaurant or a wine bar or something like that, and you want to give her a little bit of a space, or you know where she could have an exhibition, please, you could find her on Facebook, or you can give us a shout. I'll give you all the details how to get in touch with that. And then on my way to see you, Roger, in Lapta a couple of weeks ago, I popped into Eagle's Nest just outside Tatlısu to check in there, as it was a year since we chatted. Can you give me your name?
My name is Veysel Çavuşoğlu.
Mike Whitehouse.
So, Mike, it was over a year ago that we caught up, in fact, that we first sort of met you. So how have things been at Eagle's Nest in the last year?
Well, we had an exceptionally good year last year, because the first time since COVID everybody was here. This year we've had a slow start to the summer, where in June we had a lot of wind Vesu used to guarantee me no rain in June. It did rain. An exceptionally hot July and August, still very high temperatures. So that tends to affect our lunch times because it's very, very hot. So we're considering, do we put air conditioning inside the restaurant? At night time, the restaurants have been really busy this year. And we've probably seen a more international customer all the way across the board. Probably one of the strongest customers at the moment is Germany. Lots of Germans come in here. Holland, Italy, the Scandinavians, of course, have always been here. But then diverse from Iraqis, Azerbaijan, every nationality in the world, which is great. It's a good mixture of customers.
Yeah. So what's your role in the restaurant and how long have you been involved?
I'm half owner of the restaurant, and me and Mike, we are together running the restaurant since its beginning. My role is in more details in the restaurant. We do things together.
And I know you were saying when we spoke to you before that you were hoping to, was it to get a Michelin star? Was that your sort of aim? Yeah. How are you going towards that, and what sort of things have you done differently in the last year?
Okay, so what we did last year, we had a 2-star Michelin chef cook at the restaurant, which was for 2 nights, a guy called Bruno Sohn. Amazing couple of nights. I think with we've talked about this morning, the challenge we've got is improving food quality in a marketplace where getting consistent produce is difficult. For instance, lamb and steak. And at times it is difficult getting the quantities that we need. To get to that Michelin star standard in Cyprus, I think what we'll have to do is cut the numbers down. And already...
The numbers of what? The
customers, yeah.
Yeah.
Last night we had 104... booked in, and we had some walk-ins, and that's regular now, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So we don't tend to have any quiet nights. So I think what we've learned as a Michelin star restaurant, it's got to be consistent. Second thing the island has got is then staff. So getting quality staff. So we've got a range of nationalities from Azerbaijan, Zimbabwe, Nigeria, Turkey Cypriots, mainland Turkey, Pakistan, and English. And we're lucky at the moment where we've got a new manager, Emmanuel, who's very, very good. He speaks Turkish and English. He's a bit quirky, but he's a really good lad. But the staff are always difficult. So we provide 3 apartments that we provide because nobody really wants to live in this area. They all want to be in town. So we pay for 3 apartments. We've also purchased a company car, which is quite a nice car. So the staff then collect all the guys and girls from the apartments, and then they get to use it for some of their pleasure time as well. But and then the third thing that's really difficult is the rising prices. I know it happens worldwide, but we must have changed our menu prices 30 times.
Really?
With it. Yeah.
Really?
And that's a combination of rising prices worldwide, importing of products, to inflation of the lira.
Yeah. You put on a lot of entertainment as well, don't you? So what sort of range of entertainment do you have here?
Actually, very different type of entertainment, from reggae events to funky house, deep house, sunset sessions. We do Cuban nights, Latin musics. We do pop, rock. We try to aim the old generation because the tourists in our restaurants from it can be from 5 years old to 80 years old people, because people comes with their family, or some people comes to visit their family because a lot of expats lives in the area where we are in North Cyprus, mostly British, but European expats. So their young sons, children's daughters, they come to visit them. So we try to do events for everyone, actually.
When I drove down here, I noticed there's quite a lot of building work going around here, because one of the special things about Eagle's Nest is that it's right on the cliff edge and you've got the beautiful sunsets. Is that going to impact in any way, good or bad?
No, I think at the moment we're surrounded by developments. There's one development right across the restaurant. There's 29 apartments. And right to the side of us now, right at the sea cliff, there's 10 luxury villas they're sold and about another 200 apartments. So we'll have some disruption short term, 2 years. And in the area, I think there's about 20,000 new apartments coming from every nationality.
Yeah, yeah.
There's probably about another 14 restaurants currently being built, so that will increase the competition. And it means that our standards and service has to go up. And competition is always good. But I think it's a good thing because what Cyprus needs now, it needs growth. It needs more money, it needs more visitors, more tourists, more people living here. And of course, we'll benefit from that.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems to be sort of everywhere you go. I mean, I live sort of Iskele way. And I mean, it's just thousands and thousands of apartments. And at some point, you sort of think, is the bubble going to burst? I mean, are there enough people coming here, do you think?
Depends on the opportunities in Cyprus, I'm guessing, because of the if people in Europe, if they see opportunity to live here, they will carry on coming. And another thing is if the world economy, especially Europe, if it keeps the consistency, I'm guessing the market will not won't collapse. But this is actually is a difficult question. There is a lot of different effects people to come in Cyprus.
So what are you looking for the next sort of year? Well, you said 2 years with the building, but the next couple of years, what are your challenges, do you think?
Forgot to say that we opened a called the Edge Bar.
All right.
So that's just below the restaurant. So that's a separate bar. And that's doing really well with the live music as well, especially summer. It closes then down about October, November. We've identified some of the opportunities in the real estate market. So my background was finance. Mm. So we formed a real estate business about 3 months back called Blue Nest, which is going quite well, still early days. But it just made common sense that use some of my skills. We've got a few other people involved. So we've got a German-speaking guy, Sue, and then a South African guy that's working for us well. So yeah, we're just trying to capitalise with some of those opportunities and maybe some development opportunities as well in the future. So,
Anything else you want to add? Anything else? I mean, you're keeping well health-wise? Because I know something we touched on before.
I'm still in remission, so that's really good. I had a well-man check-up yesterday with the doctors, which I'll quick mention an amazing doctor called Dr. Turk, amazing guy. I just need to have some lifestyle changes, get a bit fitter.
Less stress.
Absolutely. Well, stress is just part of it, but no, I'm still fighting fit, still
living the dream.
Absolutely. You know, I never complain about the heat because that's why I come here. You know, one of the reasons I'm saying is, will the bubble burst? So we have 320 days of sun. We're virtually crime free. Okay, we have some crime in major cities, but round here is very little crime. Apart from that, you know, we live right on the sea edge, and that's why Forbes voted it, you know, the number one place to buy a beachfront property in the world. And that was part of the rush, is when you get a publication like Forbes that say North Cyprus is the number one place to buy in parameters in the world, that's put a great big green stamp on it. And we're also now getting lots of American customers as well. So that's a long way to come. And again, it's a bit like I was comparing, have Spain ever stopped developing? Has Portugal? No, they haven't. And our property prices now, they're probably very similar, apart from try and find a villa that's right on the edge of a sea cliff for less than £4 million in Europe. You know, they're selling now apartments, a penthouse in Iskele for £1 million. But an hour and a half in Limassol, that'd be €9 million. So it's all relative.
Thank you to Mike and Vaisel for chatting with me. So, as I say, some interesting comments on foreigners coming in and the fact that he's actually started looking at being an estate agent himself. So cashing in on what's happening in the area. And you can't blame people. I mean, you know, you're going to get swept up in the tide as well. And obviously good for business.
I found it very interesting also, Sarah, where he said to change the prices on his menu about 30 times. And I don't think that's any exaggeration. You barely go to a restaurant these days around here and find the price the same as it was last time you went. Also, he said the difficulty in getting good produce regularly. Being a restaurateur at the moment, it's pretty tough, and good luck to him. But the best thing we heard in that interview, I think, is that his health remains stable. And I think that's the most important thing of all.
Yeah, yeah. Just on that, I mean, you were saying about sort of keeping up. I mean, because we got all these people coming into the TRNC, it is sort of playing catch up, you know, because they want all the things that they can have at home. And, you know, with not having direct links and you can only get stuff in from Turkey, you know, it's difficult sort of getting in all those things that everybody wants, that they need all the time. So, again, it's just sort of playing a little bit catch up. We've got some things to look ahead to, haven't we, in our next couple of weeks for our podcast. I interviewed Gemma, who is sadly going to be leaving the TRNC, but she's been there for 12 years, so we'll hear from her. And then you've chatted to a very interesting gentleman.
Yes, I've chatted to a Swedish man called Willie. A lot of people have heard about him. Willie Lindt, his name is, and he was a UN lieutenant in 1964. He was here during the siege of Urenkoi, and he's written a book about it. And the beauty of it is, the story is incredible. He went to prison back in Sweden for 8 months. He was charged with all sorts of things, but basically he was shipping guns to the North Cypriots, who were getting completely outrun. And even in his home country, his name was absolute dirt. It was I can't imagine your own countrymen thinking that of you, because, of course, all they got was one side of the story. During his incarceration, he wrote this book. He only published it a couple of years ago, but it's not, he didn't have to rely on his memory, because he'd written all the 100 pages while he was in prison. And I'll tell you what, it's a stunning story. And it's so important that people who were there during the Troubles know what the story is. And of course, so many people are brainwashed into thinking the trouble started in 1974 when the intervention came from Turkey to save the Turkish Cypriots from possible genocide. And of course, that story has been lost in lots of history books. So to actually hear someone from there who was not on either side, in fact, his job was to maintain peace and tranquility, if he could, him and his troops. So it's a fascinating interview, and that will be coming out in about 3 or 4 weeks, I think.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thank you very much indeed for listening again. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. And as I say, you do click on subscribe so you know when the next one is coming out. If you want to get in touch with us, if you know somewhere that Cool could show her paintings, or you just want to get in touch, perhaps you'd like to be on our podcast, we'd love to hear from you. We're on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for Talking Round North Cyprus. We have an email address as well, which is trnc.podcast@gmail.com. I'm Sarah Palmer.
And I'm Roger Barr. We look forward to talking to you again very, very soon.